back several of his brothers, who made to intercede.
"Not until you understand," growled Red Fang, shooting a warning glare at his own comrades and circling Lydran. "Not until you see how far I'm willing to go."
With that, Red Fang sprang again, but this time Lydran was ready for him. He swung up a forearm and smacked the Fenrisian's punch aside before launching a jab of his own that connected with Red Fang's chin. Bone cracked, and Red Fang's head snapped back. The Space Wolf gave ground, but Lydran didn't follow, hoping that he might have knocked some sense into Red Fang. His own fury had boiled away the moment the argument came to blows, and he was now acutely aware of the Gyrish, watching aghast as their supposed champions brawled like animals before them. His hopes were dashed as Red Fang came in again, swinging an almighty haymaker with his right fist. Lydran blocked again, only to realize too late that the broadly telegraphed attack had been a distraction. Red Fang dropped, sweeping with one foot and savagely smashing Lydran's feet out from under him. The librarian yelled as he fell, hitting the ground with a crash of metal on ferrocrete. He rolled quickly aside, his eyes widening as he heard Red Fang's boot stomp down where his chest had been, hitting hard enough to crack the ferrocrete. Had this erstwhile ally lost his mind? Was this the wild beast of Fenris unleashed? The rumours and whispers about Russ's sons proved for all to see? Or worse, was this entirely calculated aggression? Was Red Fang aiming to take Lydran apart, maim him so badly that none would dare challenge his word again? Did the Fenrisian truly believe that was what he had to do in order to fulfil his duty? Lydran surged back to his feet and spun in time to knock aside several more swinging punches. He fought, as his chapter taught, solid as stone, unyielding, relentless, expending no more strength or energy than he had to while his foe tired himself upon his defences. Yet Red Fang was big, Primaris big, despite having never crossed the Rubicon, and he fought with a mixture of animal ferocity and predatory skill that soon saw Lydran's armour dented in half a dozen places. How long could this continue? Wondered the librarian, seeing again the pale faces of shocked Gyrish in a staring sea around the landing pad. How long did he dare let this continue? Until the onlookers lost all hope, and word spread of the division between the Space Marines who had let Governor Callistus and all her conclave die? Until Red Fang beat him senseless? Red Fang's fist caught him in the chest and staggered him, before a second blow hammered into his jaw. Lydran heard something crack, spat out a shattered tooth, and before he knew what he was doing, he felt himself reaching for his powers. He could lend siege hammer strength to his blows, he knew, could finish this fight with a single punch before the situation worsened any further. Lydran saw the trap before he stepped into it. If he beat Red Fang that way, he might win this fight, but in doing so, he would shatter the Imperial Alliance altogether. Who knew how much damage to the war effort today had done already? How much capital the surviving cultists would gain from the governor's death and the brutal massacre of Claritus's defenders? How much worse would matters be if he underlined his fearsome otherness to the Gyrish by using his powers upon a fellow Imperial warrior? He would alienate the Imperial fists from those they sought to protect, make them look every bit as cruel and monstrous as Red Fang had made his own forces appear. And he would drive an irrevocable wedge between his brothers and those of the Death Watch in the process. This has to go the other way, thought Lydran, as far as it must. With that, he dropped his guard and said clearly, "Enough, Watch Captain! I concede, but I will not be party to a bombardment. I will not permit a slaughter. We must find another way." Red Fang's lips pulled back from his canines in a snarl. "Damn your stubbornness," he said. "Why can't you see?" He launched himself at Lydran. The Space Wolf delivered a thunderous blow to the librarian's jaw and then faltered slightly in surprise as his victim did not even attempt to block the strike. Stars exploded across Lydran's vision, and he slammed to the ground for a second time, only for Red Fang's boot to smash into his midriff with battering ram force. Lydran doubled up and felt blood spatter from his lips onto the ferrocrete. He felt himself hefted upwards, Red Fang's armoured fingers curling around his gorget to drag him up off the ground. Then again the armoured gauntlet slammed into his face, and the back of his head hit the ground with enough force to crack bone. Lydran's vision blurred, then refocused. His thoughts came slowly and his movements were sluggish, but he rolled over and pushed himself up to his knees. He looked up at Red Fang, who stood over him, shoulders rising and falling with his panting breath.
"I think we all see," he said, spitting another mouthful of blood onto the ground.
Red Fang snarled, his eyes wild, and in that moment Lydran was sure that if the watch captain had acted with controlled aggression before, his frustration, his desperation to find the enemy at any cost, his furious need to be obeyed, had all conspired to sweep that control away. Obsession had taken Watch Captain Red Fang. The need to prove he would pay any price in the name of victory. The need to justify the price he had already paid. And Lydran was sure that Red Fang was ready to kill him. The Fenrisian drew back his fist again with a howl, and then suddenly found himself unable to move. His eyes bulged with shock and rage as he strained against the invisible bonds of geokinetic energy that now held him.
"I let you do this,"
said Lydran, driving himself to his feet. The effort of keeping his powers focused with his head ringing like a prayer bell was tremendous, yet focus them he did.
"Did you understand that, Lofar Red Fang? I let you do this, so that all would see where this division will take us."
Red Fang struggled, and Lydran felt the furious strength of the Fenrisian as he strained his psychic fetters almost to breaking point. The watch captain tried to spit some oath or insult, but Lydran would not allow him even that. Not yet.
"I am going to release you now. Do you understand? But if you raise your hand to me or any other Imperial servant again, then know it will make you no better than the beasts we hunt, and all here will bear witness."
With that, Lydran released his psychic hold upon Red Fang and dropped to one knee, breathing hard. The Space Wolf stared at him, eyes wild, shoulders rising and falling with panting breaths. He flexed his fingers like claws, but he made no move to attack. Lydran met his gaze, lip curled in disgust. Suddenly, Sorkal was there, grabbing Red Fang's arm with both hands, dragging the watch captain around and staring hard into his eyes.
"Brother! Fenris! Stop this now! Have you lost your mind?"
Red Fang looked for a heartbeat, as though he would strike Sorkal too, then seemed to recognize the Chigorian, and the strength went out of him. The watch captain's shoulders sagged, and he swept his gaze around the assembled onlookers as though seeing them for the first time.
"We won't win like this, Lothar,"
said Sorkal, lowering his voice so that only Red Fang and Lydran could hear his words.
"We can't. It will be Jagora all over again. What use to the Imperium are a string of dead worlds? The fist is right. How long until we are no better than the Xenos?"
Red Fang shook his head bitterly, looked at Lydran's blood where it had stained the knuckles of his gauntlets. He took a slow, deep breath, his eyes closed, and when he opened them again, it was as though a shadow had passed over his features and left them somehow clearer, lighter. To Lydran's surprise, the Space Wolf actually flashed him a wry smile that contained entirely too many canines to be reassuring. He reached down and grasped Lydran's forearm in a warrior's grip, then pulled the librarian to his feet. The Imperial fist started forward, Tarsen reaching for his pistol, but Red Fang held up a hand, palm open, and tilted his head back slightly as though baring his throat.
"Peace, fists, peace. There has been enough violence between us this day," he said. "By you, perhaps," growled Tarsen,
but Lydran shook his head wearily.
"He's right. This division serves no one.
he said. We need to decide our next action, and do what we can to reserve the damage caused to the Gyrish morale by this spectacle.
Well, I hope you have a damned good idea, Fist, because if we...
Red Fang trailed off, frowning as he saw commotion amongst the Gyrish soldiery. Then came cheers. First, one, then more, rippling through the ranks.
What?
Asked Lydoran, wiping blood from his jaw and shaking his head. He looked at Tarson, who had his head cocked, one hand to the side of his helm, as though he were listening intently to his vox. Then the ancient looked up, and his words reignited the spark of hope inside Lydoran's breast.
The governor, she got out, he said. She's on her way here by air, brother librarian, and she says she knows where the enemy's nest really is. She's sending rendezvous coordinates. She believes she knows where we can find father.
Chapter 14.
Back aboard the Vengeful yet again,
said Lydoran to ancient Tarson, as their gunship swept low through the jungle mists. Wings of Imperial aircraft trailed in their wake, displaying the yellow of the Imperial fists, the black of the Death Watch, and the burnt orange of the Gyrish Airborne.
We shall owe her a debt of gratitude by the time this war is done to the machine spirits of all our aircraft,
replied the Ancient.
If we win this damned war, we'll owe a debt of gratitude to more than just our machines, said Lydoran, thinking briefly of all the heroes his company had lost upon this accursed world.
I'll be thankful just to return to conventional siegecraft, preferably against a foe that declares themselves openly and fights with some honour, said Tarson, shaking his head ruefully.
He ran one gauntleted palm through his short cropped stubble and down over his scarred face, in a gesture of weariness.
I don't envy the Death Watch the nature of the battles they must fight, said Lydoran by way of agreement.
Small wonder Red Fang is a little cracked, grunted Tarson.
I don't think Watch Captain Red Fang is going to be a problem again, said Lydoran, working his jaw ruefully. His face gave off warm pulses of pain, despite the attentions of the Death Watch apothecary, Sorkal.
He beat you half to death, brother librarian, said Tarson reproachfully. If Astor had seen that...
I allowed it, Tarson, replied Lydoran. He had to see for himself the line he was crossing, the line I wouldn't follow him over. I think the Watch Captain is an honourable and dedicated servant of the Imperium. He just needed to see that we cannot defend the Imperium if we become as monstrous as that which threatens it.
A lesson you decided to deliver at the expense of your face, observed Tarson dryly. Throne. Lydoran, I nearly shot the Fenrisian bastard.
I'm glad that you didn't, brother, said Lydoran. Besides, a fresh scar or two can't hurt my reputation with the more traditional of our warriors.
Depends how they were earned.
They were earned well, teaching the wolf how resilient and unmoving the Sons of Dawn can be,
put in Dreadnought Brother Geshmund, who stood near their restraint thrones with his massive feet maglocked to the deck.
Any who dispute this are fools.
Lydoran smiled slightly at that. Few would be brave enough to gainsay the heroic ancient. He was about to reply when a priority hail chimed over his vox. He heard the telltale whine that told of powerful scrambler spirits being summoned to defend the sanctity of the close-range channel.
Governor, well met, he said,
linking to the proffered command channel.
Brother librarian, we are glad to hear your voice, replied Osmyndri Callistus.
Lady Governor, please accept my apologies for the losses you have suffered this day.
If anyone has penance to do, it is me and mine, came Red Fang's voice, as he patched into the command channel.
Lydoran blinked in surprise.
Watch, Captain. Brother librarian, our enemy's attack was insidious, as honourless as they have ever been since this conflict began, replied the governor,
and Lydoran had the sense that she was reciting a speech that had been rehearsed more than once in the last few hours.
Had your forces been present at Angelica's Hive, we doubt it would have stopped what happened, so much as greatly increased the butcher's bill of our enemy's victory. Watch, Captain Redfang. If not for your offensive against Claritos Hive, many of our regiments, not to mention our own brother, would have been caught by the cult's suicidal attack. Instead, he and they fly at our backs into battle even now, offered the chance to fight for the world they love. Brother Librarian Lyderin, were it not for the heroic actions of your chaplain Storn, we might have died there ourselves, and the entire city been engulfed in the disaster that followed. We do not seek cause for penance, but rather the hand of the Emperor at work in preserving the armed forces required to finish this war for good and all.
There was silence over the command channel for several heartbeats, as Lyderin and Redfang absorbed the governor's words.
"Your message suggested you know Father's whereabouts," prompted Redfang.
"We couldn't risk the information to an open channel," replied the governor. "But yes, it seems clear to us now where the beast must lurk. The warhead that was deployed against Angelica's Hive spire was a biopurge bomb."
Lyderin frowned. He had heard the term weeks before, and now, with a swift dive into his eidetic memory, he had it.
"The munitions that triggered during fighting in Hive Mistraka," he said.
"The same," replied the governor.
"I understood that contagion had emptied Mistraka of all life, that its effects remain potent," said Lyderin. "Could they have entered the Hive to recover the weapon? Protective suits, rebreathers? Would that have been enough?"
"It would not," replied the governor. "Angelicus was fortunate in that the discharge of the weapon was channeled upwards by your chaplain's efforts, rather than down into the body of our Hive. The high altitude and swift winds of Hive Spire served to swiftly dissipate the weapon's fumes, and still we are given to understand that few survived above the Commercias, while the Tektos mine is even now being evacuated, lest the weapon's fumes fall upon them. That was one warhead. Mistraka Hive was slain from within by dozens."
"Then the only way our enemies could have had such a weapon is if they had stolen it before the disaster," said Lyderin. "It is more than that, though, isn't it?" growled Redfang. "Think, Fist. Have you even looked at Mistraka Hive since your arrival?" "The Rothful subjected it to scans, of course," said Lyderin, frowning. "We found no life signs within 50 miles of the Hive. No movement, and all machine spirit signatures were hopelessly unstable and corrupted. Mistraka is dead. On the surface it is," replied Redfang. "Governor, you're suggesting Father is underneath the city ruins, aren't you? It's the perfect place for a lair. Fangs of Ras, how did I miss that?"
"That is our belief, Watch Captain, yes," replied the governor. "Enough solid rock between the biopurge agent and our enemy's lair would shield them, we believe."
Lyderin's frown deepened. Something still did not cogitate. He thought of how easily the contagion would spread down through even the most secure tunnels and bulkheads. Certainly, if the enemy were using the city's ruins as the hub of their war effort. He pulled up a schematic of Hive Mistraka and its surrounding region on his data slate, expanded its radius slowly, his siegecrafter's eyes flickering over every detail of the region. Then he stopped, revelation hitting him like a thunderbolt.
"The mines," he said. "Fansappen Mine is located 62 miles east of Mistraka, amongst the Blistercrag Range. If they extended their deep bores through the roots of the mountains and then westward, they could have excavated chambers deep beneath the piles driven into anchor the Hive's legs. But it would have been the labor of decades and suicidally hazardous."
"Does this uprising strike you as having been hastily prepared, Brother Librarian?" asked the governor, archly.
"I found no sign of parasitism or Xenos mutation in Clan Lord Vansappen," said Redfang. "The arbitrator's investigation after the blast in the Vansappen warehouse turned up with no links whatsoever. Governor, are you sure of this?"
"We have knew Torfin Lo Vansappen since we were young, Watch Captain," replied the governor wearily. "We found him ever to be vainglorious, lazy, and stupid. We can well believe that such rot could have spread beyond his self-centered notice.
Governor, the situation upon Gaia hangs by a thread, said Lyderin, after a long moment's thought. My warriors, and Red Fangs alike, took losses in the assault upon Claritos Hive, as did your airborne regiments. The attack upon Hive Angelicus looks like a spectacular victory for the cult, even if word of your survival can be disseminated amongst the people. There will be many now who look to what has happened and believe that the writhing worm can strike with impunity wherever they please. If we launch another false strike, it will cost us more than lives. Another mistake could cost us this world.
We have watched while others fought for our world, Brother Librarian, said the Governor, and Lyderin was surprised to realize that beneath the ironclad composure of her voice, he could detect an undercurrent of fierce anger threatening to break the surface. We have sat our throne and done our duty as figurehead and debater of policies, even as those we purport to serve have fought and died in our name. It has not been easy. But if it has offered one benefit, it has provided us with perspective. We did not have the courage to gainsay Watch Captain Redfang before the Claritos offensive.
Ha! I would have scorned you if you had, spat Redfang, and Lyderin couldn't tell who the Space Wolf sounded angrier at, the Governor or himself.
Be that as it may, our suspicions were already growing. But it took this last atrocity for us to finally open our eyes to what the Emperor was telling us, continued the Governor. We believe, with all our heart, that our enemy lies deep below the roots of Mastraka Hive, and now that we know this, we will sit and watch no longer. You fight for our world, gentlemen, and so we ask you to have faith in our belief. Our duty as governor is to defend this world. Let us do it, and let the Emperor judge whether we are worthy of his forgiveness or not.
Governor, do you intend to fight in person? Asked Lyderin. Before he could voice any sort of objection, Tarson thumped him on the shoulder guard and gestured to his data slate. The Ancient had keyed the device to display the Thunderhawk's external vid feeds, and as Lyderin watched, a squadron of hawk-like fighter craft streaked through the middle of the Imperial Air Armada to take up positions at its leading edge. He saw 7 craft, 6 heavily modified lightning interceptors in the livery of House Callistus, led by a magnificently gilded swoop-winged fighter craft, of a pattern he could not place. Batteries of laser weaponry hung from its wings, and multi-barreled cannons jutted pugnaciously below its muzzle.
"What is that? Archaeotech?" asked Tarson in wonder.
Seeing the heraldry displayed proudly on the fighter's tail fin, Lyderin shook his head and smiled despite himself.
"That, brother, is the Governor. Looks as though she's come out of retirement."
Chaplain Storn sent us an encoded vox, even as he was on his way to try to stop the bombing, said the Governor. We and our gubernatorial guards had time to reach our private hangar in the spire tip. We will not squander the chance we have been given huddling in some bunker behind the lines.
If we're doing this, we need a plan, said Redfang. The Hive ruins are lethally contaminated, and the only route of entry we suspect exists runs along 60 miles or more of tunnels that they could surely collapse on us in extremis. The Beast's lair won't be easy to reach. I believe I may have a solution, though it will be dangerous in the extreme, replied Lyderin, his mind racing. Permit me a moment to hail Tikmarine Asphor and Shipmaster Gavorn and patch them into this channel. We will require their expertise. And, Governor, I should warn you, if you agree to this, it may have consequences for your planet for decades to come.
The consequences of defeat would doubtless be worse, Brother Librarian, replied Callistus. Recount your plan, please.
They were still 80 miles distant from the ruins of Hive Mastraka when Lyderin's plan was set in motion. He watched the horizon through Vengeful's vidfeeds, his eyes locked on the glimmering line where the pearlescent sea of jungle mist met the bruised blue of Gaia's dawn skies. Faintly, he could make out the unnatural whirls of the Cicatrix Maledictum, where it polluted the heavens. But he forced himself to ignore the corrosive sight, and focus instead upon the distant black silhouette that marked where the hive rose to scrape the gyrish atmosphere.
"If this does not work, we'll have to abort swiftly," noted Tarson. "Cannot risk flying straight into the contaminated zone."
"It will work," replied Lydran, flexing his augmetic hand around the grip of his stave.
He hoped he sounded more convincing than he felt. He and his comrades had gone over the plan in exhaustive detail, had spent almost an hour examining alternatives, but every scenario they constructed ended in failure. They could not gain access to the brute nest via the Van Sappen mine without giving their enemies too long to react, or to cave the tunnels in upon them. They had no guarantee that any other entrances or exits to the suspected nest existed, and any efforts to scout such possibilities would cost them days. Days during which the planet's situation might destabilize entirely, and all would spin off its axis. Nor could they land troops in the contaminated zone to search for routes down upon the surface without condemning them to swift and horrible death.
"There is only this," he muttered to himself.
Then fire stabbed down from the skies, and it was too late to turn back. As he watched the searingly bright lance beam split the heavens, Lydran had a momentary sensation of vertigo, as of stepping off a high precipice and beginning to fall. He thrust the feeling aside, recognizing it for the doubt that it was, and gritted his teeth. In the distance, a bright light blossomed, fire roaring up from the point where the lance beam had stabbed through Mistraka's metal hide. A second beam speared downward, then a third, then a fourth, like blades of light impaling the man-made mountain. "Gunnery seneschals report direct hits upon Hive's primary and secondary generatorums," came the crackling voice of Shipmaster Gavorn over the vox, his words distorted as atmospheric electrogeists whirled in frenzied madness away from the impact points of the lance beams. "Death Watch strike cruiser reports accurate impacts and..." Whatever else Gavorn had to say was lost in a sudden hurricane of electro-disturbance. An instant later, the horizon was illuminated by a rapidly expanding sphere of blinding light and leaping flame. The detonation raced outwards and upwards with ferocious speed, a ravenous newborn star devouring everything in its path.
"Throne of Terror," breathed Tarson.
Lydran could only nod in mute awe, as impossible destructive fury was vented before his eyes. The shockwave reached them, racing away from the explosion as though in terror, and Vengeful bucked furiously as it rode out the impact. Bursts of bright light on the edges of the vid feed told Lydran that not all the gyrish craft had been so well piloted or fortunate as his own. But he couldn't tear his eyes away to assess the damage. The mist rolled over them in a lambent tidal wave, and as the Thunderhawk punched through its other side, it was met by a scene of apocalyptic devastation. The jungle was exposed, its mists temporarily driven back, and Lydran saw that the predatory riot of xenoflora was in uproar. Thrown tendrils coiled madly from beneath vast clawed trees that had toppled onto them as the shockwave tore them from their roots. Drip gullets lumbered through the fronds and slashing blade leaves of smaller plants, their ambulatory root balls carrying them away from the devastation as quickly as they could go. Ephemeral streaks of grey flesh and flashing golden cilia showed where the so-called mist beasts fled for the cover of the fog banks. Further towards the blast, Lydran saw that the jungle was aflame, studded here and there with immense chunks of scorched metal, now unrecognizable as anything other than wreckage. Further still, and the jungle was vanished altogether. Even the withered remnants that had been left by the biopurge now annihilated wholesale. As Vengeful streaked closer to their target, Lydran saw that massive cracks had rent the scorched bedrock, radiating out from the epicentre of the blast and running between more metallic masses of debris, some of which were the size of small settlements in their own right. Perhaps the most awe-inspiring sight of all was the seemingly impossible column of fire and metallic debris that still climbed up and away from the detonation, just as Tekmarine Asphor had predicted it would. The blast had blown a wound into the very atmospheric envelope of the planet, and its sheer force had been enough to hurl vast portions of the ruptured hive Mastraka up through the resultant vortex and into the void beyond. Lydran muttered prayers to the machine spirits of the Imperial Vox network, beseeching them to vanquish the electrogeists and restore communication as swiftly as they could. The lance fire had detonated the hive's already unstable plasma generators, which, in turn, had triggered its central magazines and promethium reserves, and the resulting fireball had been enough to catch the enormous reserves of biological gases still trapped within the hive structure, where several hundred million living beings had fallen to hyper-rapid decomposition just weeks before. The resultant blast had been everything Lydran had hoped for. Perhaps more. But had the rest of his plan worked? Or were they flying into a contaminated death trap?
"We will be into the contamination zone in less than a minute, Brother Librarian," said Tarson, warning in his tone.
"This is Lydran to any void-born elements," Vox the Librarian. "Gavorn, anyone, did it work? Do you have Orspeg's data? Did it work? Please confirm."
Static roared back at him.
30 seconds, reported Tarson. "Brother Librarian?"
Lydran thought of the consequences of failure. The blast might, if they were fortunate, have killed Father and all of his foul brood. But somehow, Lydran doubted it. If the enemy were cunning enough to sight their stronghold beneath a biocontaminated death zone, they were cunning enough to dig down deeply enough to prevent orbital bombardment from reaching them. They could keep hammering the site, but it might take hours to break through, and by that time Father could have fled to any number of bolt holes. No, Red Fang had been fiercely insistent on this point, and Lydran had concurred. They needed to break into the brood nest, locate Father themselves, and kill the beast by their own hand before broadcasting evidence of its ruined corpse to every settlement on Gaia. Only in this way could they break the cult of the writhing worm once and for all. But for that to happen, they needed to sterilize the blast zone around Mastraka, and that, in theory, had been the job of the immense fireball that the Imperial warships had just unleashed.
"In theory," he muttered,
desperately listening for the slightest sound of verbal communication from the Vox.
10 seconds, Brother Librarian," said Tarson.
"Orders!"
Storn's words came back to Lydran then, and he heard again for an instant the distant drone of insects in a cloister now scourged of all life, hundreds of miles away atop Angelica's hive.
"Sometimes, Brother Lydran, you have to take things on faith."
"Proceed," he ordered.
Every Imperial fist in the dropship's troop bay tensed as the Thunderhawk streaked on towards the contamination zone. They would know quickly if his decision had been wrong, Lydran thought. Even the Thunderhawk's atmospheric seals might not endure the bite of the concentrated biopurge agent long enough to stage an abort, and even if they did, the Gyrish would surely drop from the sky like flies. They flew on. Nothing happened. Hive Mastraka grew closer. Lydran blew out a relieved breath. Then came a violent shuddering, and a lurch that threw him sideways in his restraints.
"Is it the contaminant?" he barked.
"Negative, my lord."
The pilot's voice crackled back through the slowly stabilizing internal vox.
"Renegade airborne cult aircraft from the east, coming in force."
"I have scrambled aircraft to intercept," said Tarson,
before taking his helm and locking it into place. Lydran followed suit.
"Impossible. They could not have taken off in response to the blast," he said.
"They wouldn't have got here so swiftly. They must have known we were coming. The rot must truly run deep.
Another traitor remains.
They must have circled the contaminated zone, looking to either pull us away from the brood nest or stop us before we got there,"
continued Tarson, bashing his data slate against a bulkhead until its fritzing readout stabilized.
"Damnation! There they are! The blast lent them some sensor cover, though it looks to have thrown their formation into a dozen kinds of disarray."
"Brother Librarian, do you read?"
came the governor's voice as the vox channels fought to stabilize.
Enemy squadrons punching into the flank from the southeast.
We see them, Governor. Can your airborne regiments engage?
Confirm, Brother Librarian. Leave the air war to the Gyrish. It is where we excel, she said.
And in his vid feed, Lydran saw the Governor's fighter and its escorts peel off to the left, their guns lighting with fury.
Push on to the Brood Nest. Take the Marauders with you. Bombers may be of use to you, but they will be nothing but a hindrance in aerial combat.
Confirmed, came Red Fang's response. Hunt well, Governor Callistus.
We shall, she replied.
Lydran watched as the Gyrish squadrons wheeled south and east, turning to meet the onrushing swarm of Valkyries, Vendettas, and purloined fighter craft, all adorned with worm forms. He saw Callistus's ornate fighter roll to the right to evade incoming lasfire before straightening out and spearing an enemy gunship with beams of ruby light. The cult craft exploded in a glaring fireball, and Governor Callistus dove through the blast and vanished from sight.
All Adeptus Astartes craft, defensive fire only, he ordered. Don't break formation. Don't deviate. Push for the blast crater and the brood nest. And someone protect those bombers!
Their first pass filled Lydaran with dread. Of Hive Mastraka, nothing remained, except for scattered debris that covered a miles-wide area. The ruins of what had once been a city of millions flashed by beneath Vengeful before giving way to a vast, glowing crater at the catastrophe's epicenter. He had hoped to see the brood nest torn open below him, its tunnels and chambers laid bare, and its defenders scattered as flaming carrion. Instead, he saw only a crater of glowing bedrock, licked by flames and riven by cracks.
Dawn, forgive us if we struck wrongly again, he said. There's no sign of the damned nest whatsoever.
Enemy aircraft on our tail, my lord, closing quickly, reported the pilot. Engaging evasive manoeuvres.
Lydran all but ignored the pitch and yaw of the Thunderhawk as it jinked, dove, then spiraled back upwards in a long arc to line its guns up on the cult fighter craft assailing it. He had no eyes for the air war erupting around him, as Space Marine gunships and cult interceptors dueled over the blazing crater. He could only search ever more frantically for the slightest sign that the enemy's fastness lay down below. The crater was massive and deep, he thought. How much further down could the brood nest have been dug? If it is there at all, a traitorous voice whispered in his mind.
Surely by now he should have been able to sense the psychic presence of the Patriarch.
Watch Captain Redfang. Do you have visual confirmation? He voxed. No, nothing. Not the fell it's pour in the snow, replied Redfang, and Lydran felt his hearts fall. Then the watch captain barked a laugh. Fangs for us! There they are! Xenos Augurs on our strike cruiser. Just got reconsecrated. Fist. The brood nest is down there. Psychochronometrics and energy readouts are spiking like you wouldn't believe. Damnation! They got their own damn hive underneath this one. But Augurs reckon it's another 20 feet or so of solid bedrock before we reach it.
Redfang broke off, and Lydran checked the whirling soup of contacts on his Auspex. He saw that several enemy craft had dived headlong into Red Fang's squadron of Corvus gunships, and that the two wings of aircraft were now engaged in a violent aerial ballet.
Commanding Officer Marauder Bomber Squadron, this is Epistolary Lydaran. Do you read me? He voxed.
The response came back at once, a young woman's voice, clipped and determined.
Receiving, my lord. What can we do for you, sir?
The enemy stronghold is located below the bedrock of the crater, 20 feet or more down, said Lydaran, suppressing his frustration and sense of powerlessness, as the Thunderhawk shuddered around him again. Can you make us an entrance?
Absolutely, my lord, she replied at once. You keep them off us long enough, and we'll knock you as many holes as you could want.
Understood. Do so, ordered Lydaran,
before sending a flicker of runic commands to his escort pilots. As one,
half a dozen Stormhawk interceptors broke away from ferocious dogfights and swooped around to form up on the wings of the trio of Marauder bombers. Lydran watched through vidfeeds as the massive aircraft lumbered towards the crater. Their turrets spun and chattered, hammering saw lines of fire into the cult aircraft that spiraled madly around them. The Stormhawks added their own fire, las beams leaping out to swat turncoat lightning fighters from the skies and dash their wreckage across the crater below.
"Commencing run,"
came the voice of the Gyrish commander, and Lydran saw the first of the huge aircraft clear the rim of the crater. He sucked in a breath as a blazing cult fighter spun through the crisscross web of Imperial fire and dived headlong into the Marauder's fuselage. The huge craft lurched, and its superstructure split as it was smashed off course. The two craft, their wreckage fused together, fell out of the air and slammed into the crater wall before being consumed in a thunderous explosion as the Marauder's payload went off.
"Thrawn alive! Keep them off us!"
yelled the Gyrish commander.
"They're suicidal!"
"All pilots! The bombers must make their run! Repeat! The bombers must make their run!" Vox Lydran to anyone who could hear. "Protect them at all costs!" His own Thunderhawk streaked around and lunged through the smoke-filled air, streams of tracer fire lashing around it. Its guns spoke, and an enemy craft came apart in a spray of flaming wreckage as it tried to line up an attack run on the second bomber. More enemy aircraft exploded as their pilots tried with frantic intensity to stop the bombers, and the Imperial pilots turned their every effort to intercepting them in turn.
"Bombs away! Bombs away! Now! Now! Now!"
came the clipped voice of the bomber commander, and as the two massive aircraft passed over the crater with bullet holes riddling them and flames belching from their damaged hulls, a twin rain of high explosives fell upon the crater below. Explosions rippled furiously across the ground, and where they struck, they gouged massive craters. Lydran thumped his throne in triumph as he saw first one hole, then another, crack, crumble, and fall away into the hollow space below. Now he sensed his prey, the psychic spore of something vast and dreadful, billowing invisibly up from the open rents like steam escaping a geyser.
"You have your entrance, my lord,"
came the officer's voice, though he heard the strain of wounding in it. The two craft were barely in the air, the cult fighters still harrowing them with lunatic intensity.
"You have done the Emperor's own work," replied Lydran. "Now get yourselves clear before they bring you down."
"Absolutely, sir. The Emperor pro—"
The fierce blast cut off the end of the commander's words, and the wreckage of her bomber fell out of the sky to slam into the blackened plains below. Lydran felt his expression set in a furious scowl, that the sight of the bomber's killer being shot down moments later did nothing to alter.
"Too many good Imperial lives have been claimed by this thrown-down madness," he growled. "It ends now. Imperial fists, Death Watch, whoever is left, full combat deployment against the breach. Armor, deploy to the surface. If the enemy attempt to land reinforcements, slaughter them without mercy." "Ha! You know, Fist, I think you and I could be battle brothers after all,"
said Red Fang over the command channel, and Lydran heard entirely too much manic cheer in the Space Wolf's voice.
"Whatever it takes, Watch Captain, just so long as the monster dies today, and its whole cult with it. Together, then, let us hunt the beast."
Moments later, Vengeful's landing gear hit the crater floor, its assault ramp already slamming open. Lydran pounded down it, as he had time and time again on this accursed world, pistol in one hand, force-stave in the other. This time, he promised himself, would be the last. Around him, Imperial Fist's infantry stormed towards the ragged craters that marked the breach into the broodnest. black armored Death Watch kill teams ran alongside them, ignoring the enemy fighter craft that streaked down for opportunistic strafing runs through their ranks. Lydran threw up a crackling force field as he ran, extending it as far as he could as a renegade lightning streaked low overhead and spat las bolts in his direction. It exploded violently, barely 20 feet above him, its wreckage streaking down. The Stormhawk that had killed it swept over the Imperial fists and back up into the vicious dogfight above, followed by the cheers of Lydaran's battle brothers. Then, the dark crater yawned before him. He glanced right to where Red Fang kept pace, the Space Wolf unhelmed and laughing like a lunatic as his mane flowed behind him. There was no time for caution now.
"Glad to see you've kept up this far, Space Wolf," Lydaran called over the vox, then leapt into the dark rent.
Chapter 15. Phoenicia Jai was thrown from her feet by a ferocious shockwave. Her ears rang as concussive waves of sound beat against her, so loud they rapidly metamorphosed from true sensory stimuli to an unending wall of pain. The tunnel shook madly. Cracks leapt along its walls and ceiling, spitting out rock dust as they burst open. The lumen strips that hung from the ceiling flickered. Several exploded in showers of sparks as their illuminating geists fled in terror. Jai rolled onto her side, screaming but unable to hear herself do so. She was dimly aware of her brothers and sisters around her, sprawled and terrified. Word had been flooding into the Temple of the Star Children for hours via miners' voxets and concealed broadcast hubs. First had come the news that Claritos Hive had fallen to the Imperial oppressors. Then, that the crushing blow had been answered as word reached them of the success of Primus Law's attack upon Angelica's Hive. Jai had burned with pride at the news, even as she had felt her heart break with sorrow for the loss of her brood brother. Then, less than an hour before, warnings had filtered in of an Imperial attack force closing on the temple by air. Jai had swallowed her sorrow at losing Law and began circulating between the grim-faced bands of neophytes who garrisoned the upper levels of the Temple of the Star Children. She hadn't truly believed that the enemy could reach them here, not with the biopurge wastes above and Father's power to protect them. It was her duty to provide strength and reassurance to her people all the same, to spread the strength that came with Father's faith, and ensure that if, by some freak chance, any of the Imperial attackers made it this far, they would meet suitably stern resistance. In truth, Jai had been excited. Surely this was a catastrophic misstep by the foe. Even as the conflict for Gaia hung in the balance, they were committing what appeared to be the vast majority of their strength to an attack that was surely doomed to fail. She had feared, when they crushed resistance in Claritos Hive, that the fight would be beaten out of her brothers and sisters. Yet to know that the Governor and all of her hated conclave were dead by Father's hand, and then to see the armies of the oppressors hurl themselves fruitlessly to their deaths, attempting to answer that blow. Jai knew deep in her heart that such a potent combination would be all it would take to see the populace surge up as one and overthrow whatever remained of Imperial rule upon Gaia. Then, as she strode along one of the upper access tunnels and dispensed soft, calm words of benediction and encouragement to her comrades, the shockwave had hit. A chunk of stone tore loose from the ceiling and fell with sudden violence. It landed atop a neophyte brother, to Jai's right, and crushed him, spraying her face with hot blood. Jai's eyes widened, and, screaming inaudibly, she rolled away before a second chunk of stone could crash down after the first. Father. She couldn't get cut off from Father. And if she wound up at the wrong end of this tunnel, that was precisely what would happen. Jai hauled herself to her feet, grabbed her staff and half ran, half fell below the collapsing section of the roof. As she went, Jai sent a pulse of encouragement to her brothers and sisters to follow her lead. As one, they staggered upright as best they could and tried to follow, even those at the far end of the access tunnel. Another boulder fell, and another. Then, with a roar that was drowned out by the wider cacophony, an entire stretch of the tunnel fell in, not 20 feet behind Jai's heels. Some of her brothers and sisters made it. Some did not. Jai kept moving, stumbling along the shaking corridor, using her staff to help her maintain her balance as she made for the guard chamber at its end. The roof and walls there were armoured, double reinforced, to withstand any danger of bombardment or collapse. If she and her comrades could get there, they would be safe. Jai sent a pulse of compulsion ahead of her. Though they had already sealed and bolted the chamber's door, the cultists stationed there threw it wide again at her mental urging, and the Magus reeled through. Cultists followed her, before another violent shockwave threw most of them from their feet afresh. More blood spurted as one of the guards smashed her head against the chamber's door before, with a supreme effort of will, Jai used her powers to seize control of the wounded woman's body and use it to heave the door closed. Jai slumped to the ground as the savage tremors continued, exchanging looks with the shocked neophytes all around her. At last, the shaking and roaring began to subside, leaving a persistent ringing in Jai's ears that left the sounds around her muffled and dull. She rose to her feet and began helping her brothers and sisters to do the same.
"Magus, what has happened?" cried one,
blood running down her face from a cut behind her bone-ridged hairline. Jai scooped the neophyte's fallen altar gun from the floor and pressed it back into her hands.
"The oppressors assail us, Claris, but Father is stronger than they. Take up your weapon and be ready to fight for your faith."
She turned, taking in the array of frightened faces and wide eyes around her.
"You all have to be ready to fight for what you believe in, to fight for Father, to fight for freedom," she said, her voice rising into a defiant shout. "They come to us, armed with the wicked blades of cruelty and hate. They drag behind them their oppressors' chains to bind us once again. But we have broken those shackles before, my brothers and sisters. We bear the light of hope within our breasts, and we will never be shackled again."
Around her, Jai saw fearful expressions harden into something more determined. She could almost hear her brothers and sisters' hearts beat faster, see their spines straighten with pride. They clutched guns and mining tools in white-knuckled grips.
"How many of our brothers and sisters have they slain?" she shouted.
And as she did, she allowed sparks of her anger to billow from her mind and ignite the dry tinder of her comrades' own.
"How many loved ones have you lost to the oppressors? How many have they killed with their idiot brutality?"
Murmurs of agreement became shouted oaths around her.
"Will we let this evil continue? Will we roll over like whipped curs and let them take Father from us? Will they deny us our ascension?"
"No!"
they roared back at her, heavy picks and auto guns brandished over their heads, oaths and invective spilling from their lips. Jai felt the upswell of zealous fury fill the chamber like pressure building in an airlock, and she fed it, stoked it with subtle pulses of her own power. Her comrades would need every ounce of their anger and determination if they were to win this fight, she told herself. This was not manipulation. It was support, encouragement, inspiration, such as countless generals had given their soldiers over countless millennia. So what if she was pushing them with her mind? She wasn't Lur, didn't have his magnetic presence or natural aptitude for command. And so, as the cult was robbed of its primus, she would have to do her best in his place. That meant using every gift that Father had given her, and using them to their fullest.
"Though the enemy are at our gates, though they strike at the heart of our faith, I tell you, brothers and sisters, that we stand upon the very cusp of victory,"
she shouted, reaching out with her mind until she felt the liquid darkness of Father's own consciousness and let it flow into her, through her, and on into her brothers and sisters, not just in this guard chamber, but throughout the Temple of the Star Children. Distantly, Phoenicia heard explosions and the unmistakable hammer of bolt weaponry. But in that moment, all she felt was a surging flow of power, the boundless exhilaration of serving as the conduit for something infinitely greater, of inspiring hundreds upon hundreds of souls to a fury of holy purpose that they would never have achieved alone. Today, the monsters are upon us, monsters dressed in the guise of angels. And I tell you, brothers and sisters, that they have nothing in their hearts but hatred, she roared, her voice echoing around the reinforced chamber and carrying on through the tunnels and halls of the temple. They will not stop until every last one of us is dead, until Father is dead. Will we allow this? No! They howled again. Then rise up as one, my brothers and sisters. Fight for your comrades and your distant families and all those you care about and love. Fight for the cult. Fight for Father. Fight with the fury of the Star Children themselves. Those who die with such purpose in their hearts will surely know ascension. The oppressors will know only death. Jai basked in the howls and cries of those around her, the defiant shouts and cult oaths that echoed to her from deeper within the temple's excavated sprawl. She hefted her staff and, filled with a sense of righteous purpose stronger and more intoxicating than anything she had ever known, set off through the still shuddering tunnels, towards the sounds of gunfire, towards Father. The chamber that Lydaran dropped into was deeper than he had expected. He fell for a good three count, and as he did so, he conjured his geokinetic energies and channeled them down and out. Lydaran hit the stone floor like a falling comet, and as his armoured boots and the butt of his staff slammed into graven bedrock, a shockwave of psychic power roared out from him in all directions. Stone exploded upwards. Dust billowed amidst crackling golden lightning. Human shapes were plucked up and hurled away like leaves in a gale, to slam into tumbling metal gurneys and cut stone architecture. Cultists hit the wall so hard that the stone cracked and their blood exploded in fans that reached the ceiling. Red Fang slammed down beside him a moment later and rose from his crouch with a low whistle. Sorkal and ancient Tarsen followed suit. The chamber they had jumped into might have been a sacrificial site or some form of strange ritual surgery. Now, it was a wreck, smashed so completely by Lydaran's powers that its original purpose was almost unguessable. Cultists lay like broken dolls amidst the devastation, and a few still groaning and twitching weakly.
"And yet they beat you in a fist fight," said Red Fang wonderingly. "That is not how I recall it," replied Lydaran, his tone dry as desert sand.
"Thought you would let me have that one fist," Red Fang said, and shook his head.
"Expediency," said Lydaran, as more space marines dropped down through the rents in the ceiling.
"We go again sometime," said Red Fang with relish. "Only this time we have a barrel of Mjod, each first, to celebrate victory. And you don't hold back. I'd rather beat you in a fair fight, eh?"
"Let us secure that victory first, Watch Captain," said Lydaran, and Red Fang answered him with a wolfish grin.
"Time to slay the beast at last," he said,
and revved Stormtooth's teeth with relish.
"Just so. Team Passandras, Team Droskar, north entrance!"
Red Fang called to his teams, who were assembling amidst the whirling dust with their guns and blades at the ready.
"Team Magnathio, Team Freitos, south tunnel. Team Alessius with me. We're taking the east route."
The black-armored space marines moved out on Red Fang's orders, the colors of a dozen chapters and more flashing in the gloom from their shoulder guards. Shot selectors chambering alien-killing rounds into their bolt weapons. At the same time, Lydran issued orders of his own, over the Imperial Fist's command channel, and squads of yellow-armoured intercessors, infiltrators and reavers moved to support the Death Watch as they advanced.
"What of the heavier infantry?" Red Fang asked. "It's quite the drop, but sure as a pelt in a Fenrisian blizzard, they'd be damn useful down here.
Move back to the chamber wall, please, Watch Captain, and allow us to oblige you," said Lydran. And he, Red Fang, Tarson, and Sorkal ducked back out of the pool of daylight that fell through the rent. There came a rippling series of detonations, and a long section of the ceiling fell in. Rumble dropped with artful precision, crashing down atop a foundation of scattered wreckage. Red Fang laughed as he saw that the mass of falling stone had been caved in to form a crude ramp that led down from the crater's surface above. A heavy crunch signaled the first footfall of an Imperial Fist's Terminator, and Red Fang shook his head in admiration as Squad Lasordus tramped down into the chamber, followed by the aggressors of Squads Torfern and Justice.
"Will that suffice?" asked Lydran.
"It won't hurt our chances, eh?"
chuckled Red Fang, then looked up as the sounds of bolt and autofire echoed from the adjoining tunnels.
"Time to move, though. We shook them, but the nest's waking up."
"Squad Lasordus, if you would," said Lydran, and the grizzled Terminator Sergeant replied with a vox pip before marching into the eastward-leading tunnel entrance with his squad. Red Fang and Lydran moved up in the Terminator's wake, their warriors massing around them while the aggressors of Squad Justice formed a lumbering rearguard. They advanced swiftly, stepping over the groaning figures of cultists, crushed by fallen rubble, and sweeping each dust-filled chamber with their guns as they progressed. Watch Sergeant Alessius, the big blood angel, consulted a complex handheld Auspex that Lydran saw was giving off a constant stream of runic readouts and pinning blips.
"Connecting corridor proceeds 50 yards ahead, then diverges," reported the blood angel, as they crossed a partly collapsed intersection.
Squad Lasordus'